To better your best and your world, you need to dig deep and grow. Join us as top experts, leaders, and creators uncover powerful insights to help you grow in life and in work. And now, your host, Michael McAvoy. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Dig Deep Grow, the show dedicated to helping you better your best and your world. Now, we're going to be talking today about a very serious subject for most people nowadays, and that's your online privacy, your identity, that of your family members as well. It's a pretty wide scope of material that we're going to cover, but I'm lucky to have an expert with us who works deep within the government as well as with private industry on issues related to privacy, your identity online, and in particular, some of the shady figures that are out to do damage to you and your identity online. Now, the person joining me is Tyler Cohen Wood, and the book that she's just come out with is called Catching the Catchfishers. So I'll say welcome, Tyler. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Great. So listen, your book, I'll ask you about the title first, Catching the Catchfishers. It's one of those like, hey, what does that mean? So I'm going to ask you right now what that's all about.
Well, catfishing is a term that has kind of become sort of viral in the younger sect, and it really means someone who is a catfisher, someone who's lying to you in the online domain. And, you know, sometimes it can be something like, you know, maybe someone you're online dating adds a couple inches to their height or takes a few pounds off their weight, but it could be much more insidious too, and it could be a predator who is targeting your child or someone who is trying to scam you out of money or even a hoax that someone is trying to scam you out of something. So it's really someone who's lying to you in the online domain.
Okay, so we're going to get into those topics. I want to just back up and talk a little about your background, just so people understand just what the level of involvement you have with this. So talk a little about where you've been and what you're doing now.
Well, currently I am a cyber branch chief for the Defense Intelligence Agency, but prior to that I worked for the Department of Defense Cybercrime Center doing digital forensic cases, intrusion and major crimes cases. I've also worked doing that for NASA and for private industry. And, you know, what that means is if a computer or digital device is involved in a crime, I analyze it to look for evidence.
Okay. So do you work in the business realm more, like working with the government and business? Or, you know, how much involvement do you have with looking at and hopefully helping to protect individual privacy and identity?
I've done both. I've done, you know, incident responses when a company's been hacked into or, you know, tried to do malware analysis, but I've also done a lot of exploitation of children cases or fraud cases. And I have to say, you know, those are the ones that really get you. And that was really the catalyst for writing this book is, you know, when you see victim after victim, and you know that there's knowledge that you can give people to help that from happening, you know, that really is what inspired me to write this.
Uh-huh. Okay. So then with that background, let's talk about what you have seen, the understanding of most people, the average citizen. What's their understanding of their exposure online? And how does that differ from what you know and how you might say treat things a little differently?
Well, I mean, I've been doing this for 15, 16 years, so I obviously have a pretty in-depth look at, you know, the things you're leaving behind or how you could be putting yourself at risk. But the average person, you know, uses the tools on a daily basis and might not really have an understanding of what's happening behind the scenes, you know, which is another reason I wrote the book, to really teach people in layman terms what's happening and, you know, the risks to your privacy, how to manage your domain, how to vet if who you're talking to is actually who they say they are, in a way that people can really understand it. And, you know, I think a lot of the technology that we use today, it really has kind of happened and become mainstream so quickly that it's hard for us to really understand what's happening behind it. And it's, you know, we rely so much on this technology.
Okay, so the average person is on Facebook, and I'm one of them. I've taken a look at my privacy settings and done what I can to, you know, not just give up all every detail of my life, but talk a little about the idea of big data and data collection. What happens behind the scenes? What are the kinds of things that someone just doesn't have a clue that might be collecting, that these data aggregators may be collecting about them? And how can they build a profile on somebody from quote-unquote anonymous data?
Well, you're always leaving behind some kind of trail. And when you use services, like you use the social media services, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, and any of them, Instagram, they have a terms of service. And they pretty much, for the most part, they will tell you exactly what they're collecting on you in relatively easy to understand English. Most of them are written in pretty non-legalese. And the amount of data that they collect, it's a lot of data. The device that you're connecting from, the location that you're connecting from, who your friends are, every time you click on a certain thing, how much time you spend. And they do this to build really a pattern of life on you because your data is worth a lot of money. But they do tell you that they're collecting this data, but most people don't read the terms of service.
Okay, yeah. So most people just don't have an idea exactly how much is being collected. Can you talk a little about what you believe most people should be focusing in on, just in a general sense, using all the social networks? We're going to talk a little about image management for those who are actually trying to use it to build a platform for themselves in business. But, you know, for the average user, what are the basic kind of things that you would say, you know, to protect yourself, to, you know, take a little bit of caution? What would you suggest?
Well, I would suggest that you read the terms of service for the applications that you use. I would also suggest that when you install an application on your phone, there's something that I call application permission creep, and this is where various applications that you use actually extend the permissions that they have to other aspects of your digital device. And, you know, Android's a little bit different in how it works than the iPhone is, but if you actually look at the permission settings of some of the applications that we use, very popular applications, you might be surprised with what they have access to. You know, for example, a very popular application that a lot of people use has access to your text messages on Android devices. And they tell you this in plain English, and if you look at the permission settings, they tell you they have the ability to collect on your text messages, actually send text messages, look at what you have in storage on the device, the contact list, and a lot of applications do this. But again, you know, I recommend that people read the terms of service and actually look at the privacy settings of the applications that they use and then make an educated decision on if they want to use that application or not.
Okay.
Based on what they're collecting.
Right. Okay, so I've seen that actually on my phone. Typically, there'll be something like such and such an application wants to access your email or your contact list.
Yeah.
That's a pretty, who knows what they're looking at? Could they actually take all your, contacts and do something or view them or work with them in some way?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you give them access to it or if the application has access to it and you've installed that application, I mean, that's something that, you know, I think is of great risk to businesses, and that's, you know, people no longer your employees no longer just sit in an office and work at their computer. They're working on the go, and they're using digital devices to do their work. Mm-hmm. And those digital, they don't have separate work devices. They use the same device for personal and for work.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have applications installed on your device that have, you know, full access to your contact list, and it's, you know, potentially collecting that contact list and selling it to third parties, you know, businesses have to take a good hard look at that application, because that contact list could be corporate intellectual property if you're a PR firm or if you're a legal firm or someone else who wants to keep those contacts private.
Get this podcast delivered to you automatically. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and more. You'll find the links here or on our website, digdeepgrow.com.
Every time I want to even look at a new app, I have to download the terms of service, read through 30 pages, and then know what I got to do on my phone. That just doesn't happen. So,
well, not only that, but every time that there's an update to that application, you have to check the update too.
Right. So for unscrupulous companies or app makers, they might just make it real simple when you first do it, not a lot of stuff, but then the update is where they throw in all the extras, right?
And a lot of them do. I mean, especially the smaller applications, or, I mean, anyone can create an app. You know, you can have hackers that are creating applications. Usually your big name applications are going to tell you in the terms of service, and they're going to tell you in the permission settings, you know, what they have permission to. They're not going to typically hide it from you.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a lot of, you know, smaller applications that do.
Right. Yeah. So that's something where, you know, people have to at least begin to look at those things, to just think a little about when the phone says that the app wants access to this or that, maybe say no to that, and you know, find out what you're lacking, what your app doesn't do at that point, instead of just clicking yes to everything. That's what I would do, you know. So it kind of puts you in a position where you can make the decision if you want to. So anyway,
exactly.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and you know, some applications though, you know, that need things that do need to collect information, like your location services, to actually use the application and to have it be effective. You know, you do actually have to give it some information. Like I have a Starbucks locator app on my phone, and I know it's collecting my location because it has to tell me if there's a Starbucks near me. So, you know, you also have to kind of think with that logic too. You know, do I want Starbucks collecting my location information, or do I want that coffee? So you just have to kind of think of which is more important to you.
Okay, yeah. So there's probably two different types of people out there when it comes to their online, you know, playing online. One is the mostly younger folks who, you know, they've grown up more with it, and they just kind of say, I'm online. I'm going to just put my stuff out there. It's kind of the way it is. Privacy is not a huge issue to me. And then there's other people who are like, I can't believe, you know, with the revelations that we've had over, you know, last year, I can't believe exactly how much has been stripped from my privacy. And so what do you say to the people who say, why should I care?
Well, you know, you're right. You actually bring up a really good point, and you have this clash in value system between this generation who has literally grown up with their entire lives spread out on the internet. You know, even from before they were born, their parents started putting pregnancy announcements about them. So they've grown up, and this is just so what they're used to, you know, Gen Xers and baby boomers and people who have been alive and actually remember times where we actually had to use things like payphones, and you know, this is all kind of sudden for us. So you do have that clash in expectations of privacy in the different generations, and it's kind of interesting.
Right.
But back to your question. So to the people that say, you know, well, why should I care? Well, you know, you want to be educated about it. There's a lot of risks out there. There's a lot of predators and people who are trying to steal your identity. And, you know, the things that you put online, you may be self-disclosing information that's making it easy for these people to do that. And you just want to protect yourself as much as possible. But again, you know, it really is a personal decision. You know, how much of your privacy do you really want to protect? And some people, like a lot of the younger generation, it's not as important to them.
Okay, so what is a cautionary story or, you know, anecdote that you have that could just point to an example of where somebody was just maybe was not aware of it, or they were just lax with what they do online? What can happen if, for instance, I work freely online, I play, I talk to my friends on social networks? Talk about the predators, the people who are trying to gather data. What can they do, and what are the ramifications for the individual?
Well, another catalyst for this book, so I no longer do digital forensics, but I still keep in touch with the federal agents that I used to support. And one of them told me a story that it's chilling, and it actually exemplifies, it's a good example of what you're talking about. And it was a case where they had a suspected child porn trader. The guy was trading child porn online. And they brought his computer in, and as the examiner was examining the computer, he found all these chat sessions that this 47-year-old man was having with an 11-year-old girl. And he had convinced her that he was a 13-year-old boy. He was from the next town over, and he had met her at a party. And he knew everything about her. He knew exactly where she lived, where she went to school, where she was on any given Saturday, that she was having problems with a girl at school named Kim. You know, he knew about a fight she'd had with her brother. He knew her dog was sick. He knew everything. And, you know, she had never told him this stuff. At least the investigator never saw these chats. But I guess she just assumed that, you know, well, I obviously did tell him this stuff. Well, how else would he know this? So he's having these conversations, and the investigator cannot figure out how he knew all this information on this girl, because she really didn't have a social media presence of her own.
Mm-hmm.
So he finds out that the suspect is going to the mother's social media pages on a daily basis. She had very few privacy settings, and she was freely talking to what she thought was just her friends about the issues her daughter was having at school with this girl, and about every other specific thing, about how, you know, her daughter had, you know, dance class every Saturday, and she had posted a lot of pictures that contained something called EXIF data, which one of the social media sites she used didn't strip it out, and he was able to actually get a geographic location of it was the girl in front of her house where she lived based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to piece together all of this information and target this young girl because of what the mother was saying.
Wow. That is chilling. Now, mm-hmm. if let's just say the mom is 30 years old, she would be, you know, Gen X, and maybe one of the folks who grew up thinking, hey, it's all cool, and you just said yourself that she didn't pay much attention to her privacy settings and probably didn't think that a child predator would be going to her profile to find out data on her, was it daughter? Is that what you said?
Right, it was her daughter.
Yeah, so
no, I mean, and that's one of the issues is people think they're protected by privacy settings, but privacy settings can and do change, and people all and they change pretty frequently. And I think people also, because you're sitting behind a computer, they have a tendency to say things that they wouldn't say to someone's face. They feel like they're just protected a lot more than they actually are.
Right. Yeah. And you brought up the idea that the settings do change. And I remember a year or two ago that Facebook, you know, basically opened up the entire profile and that anything that you do is public. That was the default when they made the change. It wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't. You can opt in if you want. It was just that's what we're doing. So, what's your guidance on how often a parent, in particular, should be checking their own profiles to make sure that they're not opening up a bag of worms just based on what these social media companies are doing.
Well, you want to pay attention to the privacy settings, but I think instead of trying to really manage, you know, and watch the privacy settings, you want to be cognizant of what you're saying and what you're putting out there. And you want to really think, you just want to change your mindset and think, you know, maybe I'm not really protected by these privacy settings. And if it's something that you wouldn't say to your boss or you wouldn't go into a room of strangers and say, then don't say it online.
Right.
And I think that that's really where it is changing that mindset that when you operate in this online domain, think of it as if you're operating in the real physical world and use those same rules apply.
Okay. So on that same note with, you know, for the parents out there, would it be better just to kind of avoid talking about the activities of their child so much or, you know, placing pictures on...
You don't have to avoid it completely, but it's just something, you know, just manage the things that you say. You know, don't give too many specifics. You know, if you're proud of your child's graduation, of course talk about that. But, you know, don't give away specific details like, you know, I'm taking my daughter to Tyler's dance studio every Saturday. Just think about how someone who maybe has ill intentions towards you or your child is going to view that information and how easy it would be for them to put this pattern of life together on you or your child.
Right. And that would include the location data, you know, like if you post a picture of your daughter's dance recital, people are going to know exactly where that was. And if she goes there weekly, you know, some stranger could show up. Now, I know that, you know, it's probably not going to happen, but you mentioned that it is a reality that it could happen. So...
Absolutely.
Looking at all that stuff is important. Now let's talk a little about the data collecting, you know, what's going on. And I want you to address this from the standpoint of that most of it is quote-unquote anonymous, you know, so that you visit a website and there's a cookie that goes on your computer. But what's really happening and how do these data collectors, how do they put together a puzzle that forms a full picture of you?
Well, they have some very, very, very good mathematical algorithms. And, you know, they piece together things like, you know, where you are at a certain, at a given time. You know, a lot of people are posting pictures from various locations, but they'll go to the same locations. You know, they're looking to see who your friends are. Because remember, you know, this data is worth a lot of money, and it's, you know, targeting you to sell to advertisers. And, you know, again, you mentioned going to websites. Well, the amount of information and the analytics that these websites have on people, it's astounding. And how this is actually pieced together. You know, some of it's from cookies. Some of it's from these things called super cookies that are, you know, cookies that can kind of read other cookies. It's like a bit of code. I've actually, on my own website, you know, I look at the analytics, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, they can tell me where, you know, if the person was into sports, you know, where they came from, what their age group is, whether they're male or female. And these data analytic companies are so good. A lot of times they know you better than you know yourself. In fact, I read a story just yesterday, and I don't remember all the details of the story, but it was a girl who was shopping at Target using her reward card, and just based on a couple of things that she started purchasing more, I think a face cream or something like that, they knew she was pregnant, and they started giving her pregnancy coupons, and her father found out, and, you know, he was livid. And he's like, well, my daughter's not pregnant, but it turned out they were right in their algorithm. She actually was.
Wow. That's pretty serious. Now, you mentioned, you know, online retailers and retailers, and brought to my mind the whole thing with what happened with Target a number of months back, where I think it was something like 70 million or 100 million credit cards were lost. Do you think that we have, like, a huge problem about really what can be done by even companies to protect our data, because when you have 100 million credit cards that just go poof, there's something wrong in my mind.
Especially with the frequency that it happens. Well, you know, as we're relying more and more on these automated systems and, you know, giving more and more people access into these systems, we're just opening up more holes. And the more software we rely on, you know, statistically, the more problems there's going to be. And, you know, it just takes a hacker, really. They just have to kind of find one hole into that system, and normally they're going to go for the lowest hanging fruit. You know, maybe some other vendor has credentials into your system, and that's what they're going to use. So I do think that we have a problem. I think companies are starting to get pretty serious about it, and they're trying to address it. But, you know, for the average person, you know, for you and me who shops at these places, and, you know, we find that there's not a whole lot that we can do. You know, my credit card, I've had to change it 3 times in just the last year. So it's very frustrating for us, and I think companies understand that, and they don't want to lose their consumers, so they are working on the problem. But yeah. But it is a huge problem.
But, you know, that leads into the last area that I want to talk about, and that's the whole idea of, you know, your identity. And this is just one of those things. You know, you use your credit card to go in and make a purchase that's not even online, and yet then your identity is exposed when these cards are stolen, and then you're totally naked to whoever these people are. There's nothing you can do, and it seems like that there's no recourse for anyone who's a victim of this. Is that true?
It is extremely frustrating. Like I said, I've had to change my credit card 3 times just this year, and it is extremely frustrating. I have one of those credit monitoring services, and I actually recommend that your listeners get one, because, you know, the $14 a month that you spend on that is worth its weight in gold, because they'll alert you right away if someone's tried to take out a loan in your name, or, you know, if someone's trying to open an account. And you can usually stop a problem right away. But I've known people who have actually haven't used these services, and they didn't find out about it until it was way too late. And I mean, it cost them so much money. And you're right, there aren't a lot of recourses for these people. The burden really falls on the victim often to try to clear their name.
So don't you, in my way of thinking, don't you think that the targets of the world should be the ones who are protecting, you know, monitoring the people who give them they've already got your information. What I'm saying is that it's the companies that we do commerce with that should be paying the bill to protect our privacy. After all, we're giving them the data.
Right. I do think that there's a lot more that companies do need to do to really protect their data. And I do think that they're doing a better job. I think as more of these things come up, they're certainly trying, because, again, you know, they don't want their consumers to be victimized either, because then they lose those customers. So they are trying to do the best that they can, but it's really hard, again, when you rely so much on so many different pieces of software and so much technology. And a lot of this technology is buggy. I mean, you remember 2 months ago we had the Heartbleed bug, and that was a huge issue. That was where a piece of software that a lot of companies use, e-commerce companies called OpenSSL, there was a bug in it that allowed hackers access into it, and it basically had to be patched by the companies. And there was nothing that the consumer could do except wait for the companies to patch it and then change their password.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's frustrating. It's really frustrating for everybody involved.
Well, that, you know, when you look at the different countries in the world, I'm thinking of a comparison between the U.S. and Europe. Europe seems to be taking a much more active and progressive role in protecting people's privacy. Do you see that as being true, and do you think that that in the U.S. we're shortchanging our citizens?
I think that we're lagging behind in terms of a lot of the security systems that they have. You know, it's very common that they have credit cards that have these PIN numbers on them, and there's secondary security systems within the credit cards. And, you know, it would be pretty simple for us to start using those types of cards too. And I do think it's something that we are moving toward, but I do think you are correct that they are ahead of us in terms of security concerns and the technology that they've implemented.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're getting close on time here, so I wanted to ask you on the last topic, the idea of image management in your book. What are some of the things that you talk about for people who do have an online presence and they actually, you know, might rely a lot on their online presence in their work or even, you know, in their personal life?
Well, you want to really take a step back, and a lot of times people will post, and they'll post, you know, as they're posting one thing, they think of just the one thing they're posting. But what they need to think about is that they have this full online identity, and they have to think about it the same way that if they were to walk into a room full of strangers, how they would dress, what they would say, how they would want to appear. It's a whole package, and that's how they have to look at their online identity. And they want to try to look at the whole thing as if they were an HR recruiter or an expert in their field or, you know, a college board who's looking at your online presence, and really get a sense of who you appear to be as a person. And then once you've established that, you know, try to control the brand that you put out there. I mean, don't become a Stepford version of yourself. You still want to have a personality, but think about the things that you're saying and how you're coming across. Are you coming across as someone who is extremely argumentative? You know, are you coming across as a bully? Are you coming across as someone who just gets so locked into the mundane details of their lives? You want to really look at it with an unbiased eye.
Right. I think it would be fair to say that, I mean, I've heard it said that don't post anything online that you wouldn't want your mother or your grandmother to see.
I completely agree with that, yes. Or that you wouldn't say to your boss, or you wouldn't show to a bunch of people at a party.
Right, so half-naked men or women drinking beer is probably not good for the long term.
Probably not.
All right. So, well, with that, Tyler, I want to thank you for joining me today. A lot of stuff to chew on, and some really helpful tips for people to go and look at. So, I guess the lesson is to go and be more cognizant of what's going on when you get an app, when you visit a social media site. Think about what you're posting. I think that's really the number one thing here. Tyler, tell me the book. It's available at major booksellers. Is there any other, your website, is there any other thing that you have for information for folks?
Really, just my website. I do a video blog on my website where I teach, you know, parents things, how to, you know, how to protect your privacy, little things. I show examples. So my website, Tyler Cohen Wood, there's lots of good information there.
Fantastic. I think that just on this topic alone, you could probably come out with a two or three more books. So we'll see what you got coming. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.